Welcome to the Black College Sports and Education Foundation Weekly Podcast, where we equip students, athletes, their families, and supporters with vital tools and information that will impact their decisions on educational opportunities and careers. Tune in every Thursday night at 7 Eastern Standard Time as we host prominent guests from a variety of backgrounds, such as education, sports, medicine, and the corporate world. Remember, the Black College Sports and Education Foundation is your one-stop resource center. Now here's your host, Gil McGregor.
Welcome to our podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Gil McGregor, and hopefully you've joined us in the past, and we hope that you will have a real interesting and insightful day today. We are quite honored to have as our guest, Mr. Maurice Wilson. Mr. Wilson does something that we all wish we could do, that's manage money. Some of us don't have any to manage, but he has a wealth management firm in Charlotte, North Carolina. Maurice, welcome to our podcast.
Happy to be here, Gil. Thank you for the invitation. I'm happy to be a part of this. I've been listening to what you guys have done in the past, and I'm excited to lend what I can to the effort that you guys have started.
Well, give us the name of your company as it is, so when they reach out to you, they'll know who they're reaching out to.
Yes, sir. The name of the firm is Wilson Wealth Management Group. We do tend to shorten it to just Wilson Wealth when we describe it. And we started in 2004 and are, you know, running today and about to celebrate 15 years in a couple of months here.
All right. Well, tell us what brought you to Black College Sports and Education Foundation in the first place.
Well, definitely. I met the founder, Mr. Ed Hayes. I would say last summer I was doing some things for my mom's high school reunion. And my mom and Mr. Hayes grew up together. And he saw a presentation I did that had nothing to do with finances, but was kind of a walk back through the years of the school that they attended in Barnwell, South Carolina. So he had some recommendations on how I could improve the video. And then one thing led to another, and we started talking about what I did and what he did. And he invited me to take a look at the foundation. And from there, you know, just based on what I do in the world of finance, we thought it was a good fit between our two organizations to help the organization complete their mission and to do things with my firm that we don't normally get to do on a nonprofit basis.
That sounds very interesting. Can you give us a little insight into some of the things that you do on a nonprofit basis to help benefit the cause, as it will?
Definitely. You know, the one thing that gets missing, I guess, because of the nomenclature or the title nonprofit is that money seems to be dismissed. But we know that money may not make the world go round, but it does make the world go.
Yes, sir.
The reason why we call it current. So currency is, you know, you have to have flow, you know, you have to have blood in the body, you have to have money flowing through our organization. So things that we do for the organization and that we're positioning ourselves to do is provide financial literacy. I have a couple of representatives in my firm that are standing at the ready to provide financial education in key cities such as Atlanta and Houston. I mean, we're growing that number as we speak. Other things that we do is we do public speaking at some of our major organizations, Black Greek Letter organizations, our HBCUs, and then, of course, our churches. And so those are some of the things that we've done in the past and that we're also positioned to do with the foundation here.
You mentioned HBCUs and, of course, the foundation deeply involved in that. And the discussion about HBCUs and some that are closing their doors, some doors have already been closed, some are doing very well. How is it that wealth management and individuals can coexist with HBCUs? How can they work together so that we won't hear the doors close on HBCUs?
Definitely. Well, there's a couple of things we can do. First off, everything that we do in the Black community, due to how we were brought to this country and our experiences in this country, leaves us about a generation to two generations behind the majority population. So things such as giving back to school and helping your school secure a solid endowment were foreign to HBCU alumni. So one way that we help is we now suggest to our clients that, hey, when you start this life insurance policy, consider leaving a portion to your alumni. We have a lot of North Carolina A&T, Tennessee State University, FAMU graduates that are in our client base. And so that's one way that we direct them. So that's something that happens, of course, upon their passing. What do we do while they're alive? Well, from that standpoint, we help them manage their cash flow, manage their financial plan, and leave them in position to become a monthly contributor to their respective organizations or respective colleges.
And let me make sure I heard you right. You said a portion. So you can have an insurance policy and part of it goes to this and part of it goes to that, but a part of it can go to the institution that you attended, a portion.
Oh, yes, sir, definitely. Some people will leave money to their church. So you can do it. You can do it in your will. Let's say you want to leave it to your estate, like a trust account, and then the trust has instructions to then send that money to the institution that you matriculated through. That is doable. So there are things that will seem foreign now because we're just catching our breath. You know, the kids who are going to college now are HBCUs or second-generation middle-class students, and some of them are first-generation college students. So we're still early in the game. And sometimes there's some discouragement among the alums that we aren't doing more as a body of HBCU alumni, but we have to remember everything that we aren't doing is kind of by design because you've been deprived of an economic base. So let's look forward to what we can start doing, not what we aren't doing.
That's a great statement you just made. What are some of the myths that keep people away from finding out about money management and how to keep that currency flowing, as you stated?
Definitely. The biggest myth is that you don't understand what's going on. When you look at the world of finance, and particularly what people would do, because the world of finance is huge, but buying a stock, selling a stock, opening an investment account, are very simplistic when you compare it to buying a car or buying a home. During the duration of this show, I can open up a retirement account and have it funded, but I can't buy a house, sell a house, buy a car, or sell a car in less than 30 minutes. So that should show you the simplicity of investing. So what really happens is people convince themselves they can't invest because they don't like the risk involved. They don't like the fact that they may lose money. So they convince themselves that they can't invest. So the biggest myth is that I can't do it because I don't understand it. It's that you don't want to let yourself understand it. So get in there and get your feet wet. Don't worry about the risk. That can be managed. But don't let the myth of I don't understand how to invest stop you from investing.
Now, there are a whole lot of investment instruments, I think sometimes they're called tools. And some of them, you mentioned stocks, and then there are bonds. And then there are commodities, and then there are whatever else. I don't know, because the word wealth and my existence don't necessarily line up. So I don't want to suggest to you that I think I know anything. But I do know that you're right. Sometimes just the nomenclature, sometimes just the ideas of what happens with money seems to be so very foreign. It seems like people who have money, Maurice, have a way of getting more money, but people who don't have money can't even start to get money. And how do people who don't necessarily have a lot of money laying around that they don't use, because most people have to use all they have and more than they have, how do you get started when you don't have money that's not doing anything but just sitting there?
Definitely. Having money, when you look at most people, you say, okay, what do most people have? And I know we're going to be very broad here. So I know some people won't have these things, but if we think about a typical person who may invest, they're going to have a house, they're going to have a car, they may have a child, they may be married, they may take trips, they may have a certain level of clothing that they prefer. All of these things that we have, and this goes from the lowest income to the middle to even the top of the income bracket, we all have these things because we made them a goal at some point. You know, most people don't question having a house as a goal. So once you make having money a goal, you will be surprised at how much money you will have to invest. And that brings me to the second part of what you said. It does seem like people who invest are able to have more money to invest. But what happens is money is what makes that happen. Money gives you options. When you look at a dollar bill, there are an infinite amount of options you can do with that dollar bill. When you don't have that dollar bill, you have less options. So the more money you begin to accumulate, once you make money the goal, you will then be able to invest more because more things will come available to you. And I would add that once you make that the goal, then it's all about what is the process to getting that money. And part of that process has involved doing something different. So if I decide to lose weight, what's my process? It can be going to the gym. It can be eating less. It can be working out more. But I have to do something different than before I set that goal if I'm going to realize that goal. And that's really the secret sauce to getting started.
Getting started. You said at the very beginning, you know, you could open up an account that's in 30 minutes. You can't buy a house or buy a car in 30 minutes. When people want to start, because I used to tease my son. I said, you know, instead of buying a pair of $90 tennis shoes, why don't you go get some stock in Nike and, you know, and maybe one day the dividend you get will be enough to pay for them shoes you want. And I said that jokingly. People who want to start may think that they don't have enough money to start. How much is enough money to start, Maurice, to make a difference?
Well, you've heard of the Bitcoin, right, or cryptocurrency?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So you can take $15 right now and get invested in cryptocurrency. So that's how much money you need.
$15.
$15.
Okay.
So it's all about, like you said earlier, you sold your son. You have these shoes because you want them. But if you want to invest, here's something else you can do. And once you set the goal, okay, Dad, what's the process? Well, find something to invest in. There are investments that trade for less than a dollar. There are investments that trade for over $2,000. So you can get invested at a lot of different levels. So it's never going to be an impediment to getting involved. Now, that wasn't always the case. There was a period of time in this country where they would not let African Americans invest in the stock market. We no longer have
wow.
that time. Yeah, the stock market today as it stands is the most democratic way or the greatest wealth creator because, in a way, it is race blind. There is no application that you submit where there's a loan officer there to decline. They don't care. All money is green. And so now access to knowledge is different. You know? And so definitely you can get involved. And it's lifted a lot of African Americans out of poverty, out of the middle class by, you know, taking this way in versus some of the more traditional routes, trying to open a business where you have to go through a number of different barriers to get there. So
whenever people are bombarded by advertising and you hear the different kind of things people try to get you involved in, even as it relates to a money market fund, an IRA, term insurance, the different kinds of things. If you were to, the average person, the average Joe like me, if you were to say, this is what I would suggest you do to start, where would you direct someone to start?
Okay, definitely. Investing requires three things: patience, persistence, and interest. So assuming you have the interest, I would start with some simple education. You can get a book called Investing for Dummies, or you can go online and go to investopedia.com. So I would start with just understanding a little bit about investing. From there, I would go to an online brokerage like TD Ameritrade or E-Trade or Vanguard. And from there, they have a lot of intuitive ways to open an investment account. And after that, you can pick something that you're interested in and start investing. So nothing I've said so far involves a guy like me. Now, if you want to know more, yes, you can turn to a financial advisor or a wealth manager that you trust, but you can do a lot of this on your own. If you want to take a shortcut, definitely hire an advisor, one that you trust or one that you can verify, and he or she can help you get started.
Now, when you decide that you're going to get that professional that you can trust, do you get someone who, and I've heard this is just layman talking again, and I'm thinking most of the people that are listening to our podcast may be layman. So do you get the person that says, I get a percentage of every transaction that I do for you, or I get a percentage off of every transaction that makes money that I do for you? How do you hire that professional, and under what terms do you hire that professional?
Definitely. So if you are working with a financial advisor, the biggest problem for most people is that they typically do not shop around. And I shouldn't say problem. It's just a fact. Like if you meet with a professional that you've heard about or been referred to and you like him or her, you're less inclined to interview two other people to make up your mind. So what I would do is once you figure out how they're going to get paid for helping you, whether it's a percentage of the money that you invest with them or if they get paid based on transactions, you can then just ask them, are there other ways that financial advisors get paid, and make them show you the difference and why they are charging you the way they are charging you. So there are a couple of different ways just to kind of round out this particular point of information. Some advisors get paid hourly. Some advisors get paid based on a transaction, and some advisors get paid based on the value of your account. And so you can make your advisor that you're interviewing show you the differences between those three and why he or she is charging you the way they charge you. There's no right or wrong way. It's all about what fits that advisor's business model and what seems fair to you for what you're asking for.
Well, what I'd like to have you do, again, give the name of your firm so that our listeners can know who they can reach out to, the fact that you're involved with our foundation, so they can come to you and find out how they can be involved in what we're all trying to do is more opportunities for Black students and their families and more opportunities for our colleges and universities.
I'd be happy to. The name of the firm is Wilson Wealth Management Group, Wilson Wealth for short. Our website is www.wilsonwealth.com, and reach us at 704-222-4162. You can email me directly at maurice@wilsonwealth.com.
We thank you for your time. We thank you for your information. And we thank you for your interest in providing opportunities for investment for our community, community conscious. The great Maya Angelou once said, when you get, give. When you learn, teach. Thank you for giving information, and thank you for teaching us a little bit more about investing. Thank you, Maurice Wilson, Wilson Wealth. We appreciate you being a part of our podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate it. The honor is all mine.
All right. I'm your host, Gil McGregor. You join us next week for more informative, insightful, and entertaining podcast. Thank you very much. Good night.
Thank you for tuning into the podcast. For more information about us, please visit our website at www.bcsportsfoundation.com. Also, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at HBCU for life. That's HBCU, the number 4, life. To be a potential guest on our podcast, contact Ed J. Hayes at ed.j.hayes@gmail.com. Tune in next week for another amazing show.